Hello there, everyone. My name is Elijah David, Minister of Trust, our Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation of South Dakota. And the orientation today is August the 17th, 2023, or 2024, or it is Elul 12, 2028. We will start our first service day with a song, and then we'll go into our services taken from Time of Greetings, Volume 1, Number 45, and it's entitled Esau and Jacob. It says, the mighty Esau and the unpretentious Jacob. Okay, it's Beatty Hall of June the 14th, 1947. We are to study the 66th chapter of Isaiah. In this chapter, the Yahweh speaks to two groups of servants. The servants up to the cleansing of the sanctuary, Daniel 8:14, to the judgment for the investigated for the living, the purification of the church, Testimonies, Volume 5, page 80. For the time in which they are found smiting their fellow servant, eating and drinking with the drunken. The other servants are the servants thereafter to hear what the Yahshua or the Yahweh has to say to his former servant as the time of the cleansing approaches. We shall begin the study with the first two verses of the chapter, Isaiah 66, verse 1 and 2. Thus saith the Yahweh, for the heaven is my throne, and the earth is my footstool. Where is the house that you build unto me? And where is the place of my rest? For all those things hath mine hand made, and all those things have been, saith Yahweh. But to this man will I look, even to him that is poor and of a contrite spirit, and trembleth at my word. Now, what did we just read? Let's read that whole thing again. Isaiah 66, 1 and 2. It says, thus saith the Yahweh, for the heaven is my throne, and the earth is my footstool. Question he's asking now, where is the house that you build unto me? Now he's asking two groups of servants here. They're all worshiping in one house together. And the oldest one is the leader. The youngest one is assisting him, the older one. They're getting along okay, they're worshiping together. But they're two groups of servants. And what we're going to find out that they're Esau's and Jacob's, Jacobites. What we're going to find out is these two groups of servants are your King Saul, first king of Israel, as Samuel anointed the people's choice to be king over Israel. And David was the second one, which was the neighbor of the King Saul, Because Yahweh told King Saul it was a neighbor better than you. And he said, I have chosen him to take your place. Now he said, I chose David myself. The people chose King Saul. Okay. So he said, now he's asking these two groups of servants, these Esau and Jacobites, says, where is the house that she built unto me? So apparently they were teaching a message for the building of a house to Yahweh that hasn't been built before. Now he's talking about this message is directly to Gilead Center, Kermit, Texas, from 1970 to 2003. A 33.5-year period there, that Rose Johnson was the ruler in charge of that house. And Yahweh is asking him and his associate, he said, where is the house that you built unto me? Well, David, back in his day, he told the prophet that came to see him, he said, I want to build Yahweh a house. I want to build a place where when they come to the earth, him and his son, that they'll have a house to dwell in. I want to build them a house here on earth. And that's how come Solomon ended up building Jerusalem. And Yahweh, a house, and his son. Took 46 years to complete it. Yahweh is asking these two servants here, in Isaiah 60, says, where is the house that you build unto me? And where is the place of my rest? For all these things hath mine hand made. And all these things have been, saith the Yahweh. But to this man, what man is he talking about? He's talking to a specific man here. But to this man will I look, even to him that is poor, and of a contrite spirit, and trembleth at my word. Now there was two servants that trembled touches that essentially run the congregation. And that was Rollis Johnson and Denton Brunk. And they were in the antitypical time period of Esau and Jacob. They were also in the antitypical period of the house of David. So we're dealing with several different types here. So it says, but to this man, well, Abraham, Yahweh called him out of Ur to start Israel's movement. He's the father of Israel. Because he was a righteous man, he had a contrite spirit. Well, Yahweh raised up a son to Abraham named Isaac that also had a contrite spirit. And Isaac raised up a son named Jacob that also had a contrite spirit. So in our day to day, we had the antitype played out at Kermit, Texas. One of those servants, Kermit, had a contrite spirit. The other one did not. So the mighty antitypical Esau wrote a sonnet. He did not have a contrite spirit. But Elijah David, as it turns out, that I was sent there to join Rollis Johnson, had this contrite spirit. That's the reason I was able to stay for 32 and a half years with him, knowing that I was sent there for that reason. No matter what kind of spirit they had, I was sent there for that reason. So Isaiah sees this in prophecy. So he says, By saying, the heaven is my throne, and the earth is my footstool, the Yahweh actually said that he has not forsaken the earth, that though his throne is in the heaven, his feet are still on the earth, that he is still interested in the house that you build unto me. So now, that house was the house that David wanted to build unto Yahweh back then. And Yahweh told David, indeed, you can furnish the material and the money, but your son Solomon, that will succeed you after your time is over, he will build a house unto me. So today, we still have that has to be done. The antitypical servant, this antitypical David, has got to fulfill the building of this house today. Alright? So in the type, when Yahweh told David, he says, you can lay the foundation, you can get all the material in your 40-year period that you're going to serve, you can gather up all the money and all the material to build me a house. But it'll be after you're gone, and your son Solomon will build it. But he'll have plenty of help, because all of your enemies that you have subdued are going to help you build this house. And they're going to furnish material, they're going to bring it to you, and they are going to build they're going to actually do the labor of building this house under Solomon's supervision, or with Solomon's supervision. So we're going to have an antitype here in the last days. Somebody else is going to have to fulfill building of a new Jerusalem. And they call that Solomon built, that Jerusalem he built, they call it one of the seven wonders of the world when he built it. Well, if you build a new Jerusalem today here on earth, what do you think that's going to do? That's going to be the eighth wonder of the world. And that's in prophecy. That has to be done. Okay. So now the question is asked, where is the house that you build unto me, and where is the place of my rest? Sadly reveal that the work has been neglected, that neither a house, not a place of rest has been prepared for him. For the Yahweh is the next statement, further confirms this fact. For the he reiterates that the things which he found were only those things which always were, and which his own hand, not the hand of his servants, have made. Then by saying, but to this man will I look, even unto him that is poor and of a contrite spirit. that trembleth at my word. He positively makes known that his unfaithful servants are discharged from his work. Okay, so these unfaithful servants in the Antitype was Brother Stephen Johnson, his son Daniel Johnson, and his wife Rebecca Johnson. They were the father and son that was in charge of this house at the Gilead Center, Kermit, Texas. Okay, I was there, sent by Yahweh in 1970 to do the legwork for Gilead Center by going to the Adventist Church and taking the message of the creation founder to them. So it says, unfaithful servants are discharged from his work, that others poor and of a contrite spirit who tremble at his word. So those others was the antitypical David, which is, turns out to be antitypical Elijah, Malachi 4:5. That's who this other servant was. He was in their midst all the time, have taken their places. And this antitypical Elijah David was an antitype of John the Baptist, which was the Elijah of his day. That what the former servant had failed to do, the latter servants will do. Okay. So the former servants work as part of the ninth hour call labors of Matthew 20:5. Those that was called in 1844. But this latter group, the second group, are called at the as a fifth group of labor, they call the call of Matthew 20:6 at the 11th hour. So there's two classes of servants there in the Gilead Center. They were working in the 11th parabolic hour, all right, together. Willis Johnson was part of the fourth movement of Matthew 20:5, called it the ninth hour for Israel. I had joined him, and Yahweh joined me to him in 1970, but I was not in charge. Like I said, I was just doing the legwork for Verlis. Because I was to wait until the fourth movement was over, and the judgment of the dead, and the last feeding pastor for the Seventh-day Adventist Church was the fourth movement. Verlis was the last worker of the fourth movement for the Seventh-day Adventist, judgment of the dead. And whenever he came to his end, Yahshua came at the Passover 2002 and made a change of the guard. He took Willis Johnson away, and he gave me to succeed Willis Johnson and to start the judgment of the living, the fifth movement at Gilead Center. So now, we have come about 22 years later. Here we are, down here in another place. It says, at the same time, he charges a farmer servant, Willis Johnson, and Daniel, his assistant, his associate, his son, servants, that they feed is that they feel rich in the spirit and in need of nothing more, that they do not fear his word. Hence the servant who are to build him a house, which is the house of David, is an answer for David's servant, and to make a place for his rest are to be men of a poor and a contrite spirit. Okay. Men who tremble at his word. Men who are not proud and boastful, but who are teachable and mindful of his word. Men who are penitent and see themselves in the need of everything instead of in the need of nothing. Finally, the Yahweh angrily declares, Isaiah 66, verse 3 and 4. Now he's angrily talking to the angel of the seventh candlestick and his son, Brother Shelby Johnson, addressing these servants. Isaiah 66, 3 and 4. He that killeth an ox is as if he slew a man. In other words, we kept the feast day by creation counter kind of Texas, but we kept them relaxed. We didn't place any emphasis on what kind of sacrifice was offered at those different feast days and times. We just went ahead and kept the day holy, set it aside, and worshiped on that day the way we wanted to worship, or the way Brother Johnson chose for us to worship. He that killeth an ox is if he slew a man. He that sacrifices a lamb as if he cut off a dog's neck. He that offereth an oblation as if he offereth swine's blood. He that burneth incense as if he blessed an idol. Yea, they have chosen their own ways, and their soul delighteth in their abomination. I also will choose their delusion and will bring their fears upon them. Because when I called, none did answer. When I spake, they did not hear, but they did evil before my eyes and chose that in which I delighted not. No matter how good or how important the sacrifices may be, so long as we serve him in our own way, our gifts and sacrifices are an abomination unto him. Man's own ways must be abandoned, even though it be the hardest test of faith, if he is to make peace with the Yahweh. There is no question but that Yahweh has now sent this warning message unto his unfaithful, self-important servant, though they do not and will not hear. Having said what he wished to say to them, he now turns to his newly hired servants, Elijah David, and typical Elijah, okay, in 2002. This all took place in 2002 at Kermit. Now he turns to them And who were these servants? There was Elijah David and his wife, Catherine. And we had one other that I had brought to the church, Alan DeLong, that worked with me. So there's three of us actually that sure hard, because Alan DeLong was the architect of the creation calendar, and we had to have him to continue on a creation calendar with us. And that's why Yahweh raised him up out of the Adventist church. Isaiah 66:5-6. Hear the word of Yahweh, ye that tremble at his word. Your brethren that hated you, that cast you out for my name's sake, said, let the Yahweh be glorified, for he shall appear unto your joy, and they shall be ashamed. A voice of the noise from the city, a voice from the temple, a voice of the Yahshua that rendereth recompense to his enemies. Some have already had the experience of being carried bodily out of the churches for no other reason than for having read the shepherd's rod, and for having said, I believe what it said. It is incredible that men should act like demons. It is nevertheless so, and the Yahweh himself testified against the demon practice. We do not pity ourselves and are not at all angry at our adversaries, but we are sorry about this spiritual blindness. Well, that applies to Brother Johnson. He fulfilled all this that Vicky Hall talked about. Those Adventist ministers acting like demons. Well, Brother Johnson was an Adventist minister. He started out as a call porter. He never stopped being an Adventist minister. As good as I've seen him. And he treated me like a demon at the end. Pronouncing the death sentence upon me and everything else. But we are sorry about the spiritual blindness. He said, it is nevertheless so, and Yahweh himself testified against a demon passion. We do not pity ourselves and are not at all angry at our adversaries, but we are sorry about their spiritual blindness, misery, poverty, and negativity, for we know that the coming joy is to be ours. And the sorrow and shame and gnashing of the teeth there. So Ricky Hart is now telling these Adventists back in 1947 here at this sermon. He's saying the shepherds are going to have the joy of being these new servants that's going to take over from the Seventh-day Adventist servant. Well, he was right. Because I became a rod believer and a member in 1970. And I came through Brother Johnson 33 and a half years. I came out of the Adventist church and the Brother Johnson's church, which is just another Adventist church. But he was teaching and believed the rod, and I accepted it. That's why I'm using the rod today. It's because this is where present truth is at. It's called the latter rain of truth. You have to have it. Just dropping the grain for the harvest. And what grain is that? That's 144,000. This we know as Verily, it is Jacob knew that Yahweh was with him in this flood on the face of Esau. He says that for the Esau of today, Brutus, and I'll put the Brutus W. Johnson in now that we have identified it, from 1970 to 2003, do not know this. No, they do not know it any more than Esau of old knew of the Jacob's night vision of the ladder that extended from heaven unto Jacob's dew-soaked bed. If any part of the Bible is becoming present truth, Isaiah 66:5 certainly is. Consequently, from the city there is a noise, and there is a voice from the temple against us, and that city is the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And the rod is David. It is a David-sized church. But the voice of the Yahweh, the message of today, is what counts and what settles all things. Are you afraid of being cast out, or you trembling at the Yahweh's word? Now you have to make your choice against opposition if you expect to be in the kingdom eternal. Isaiah 66:7, before she travaileth, she brought forth. Before her pain came, she was delivered of a man-child. For a woman to be delivered of a child before she travailed, and before her pain comes, is an incredible thing, a miracle. And that is just what happened to the church when the Yahweh, Yeshua, was born in the manger of Bethlehem. The church knew not her visitation. That was the Pharisees. They were in charge of the church then, and the Sadducees. And though she felt no need of a Savior, she travailed not. Yet she brought forth a child. But according unto the verse as follows, the church in this day shall experience even a greater miracle than did the church in the Yahshua's day. Okay, now we'll just look for this miracle now. Isaiah 66:8. Who hath heard such a thing? Who hath seen such thing? Shall the earth be made to bring forth in one day? Or shall a nation be born at once? For as soon as Zion prevailed, she brought forth her children. For the church is now filled with the terror, with the bad fish, and with the ghost. It is hard to find a saint. She is nevertheless all at once to bring a multitude of converts which no man can number. For the denomination does not believe this, no more than the Jews believe that the Savior was born in a manger, nor any more than did they expect the fishermen of Galilee to take the place places of the pious priest and of the exalted religious leaders of that day, and no more than did they expect the Gentiles to share in the promises of Israel. For the denomination of today, too, thinks that tomorrow is to be as today. Now that Yahweh has left man forever to do as they please. She does not know that the Yahweh is taking the reins, or the Yahshua, the Son, has been sent to take the reins in his own hand. Testimony to ministers is 300. She still thinks that she is rich and increased with goods, truth, and have need of nothing more. The church will nevertheless see all the promises fulfilled. She will see that these scriptures are not in the Bible merely to fill space. As soon as she thus travails and feels her need, just as soon will her course be filled with the saints and her work finished. Isaiah 66:9. Shall I bring to the birth and not cause to bring forth, saith the Yahweh. Shall I cause to bring forth and shut the womb, saith the Yahweh. Would the Yahweh have made these promises if he were not able to fulfill them? This is the great question before you, before me. And would he start something if he cannot perform and finish? You must not highly pass over these questions, for your answers will decide your destiny. Isaiah 6:10-14. Rejoice ye with Jerusalem, and be glad with her, all ye that love her. Rejoice for joy with her, all ye that mourn for her, that ye may suck and be satisfied with the breast of her counsels, of her consolation, that ye may melt out and be delighted with the abundance of her glory. For thus saith the Yahweh, behold, I will extend peace to her like a river, and the glory of the Gentiles like a flowing stream. Then shall ye suck, ye shall be born upon her side, and be dandled upon her knees. As one whom his mother comforteth, so will I comfort you, and you shall be comforted in Jerusalem. And when you see this, your heart shall rejoice, and your bones shall flourish like an herb. and the hand of Yahweh shall be known toward his servant, and his indignation toward his enemy. Here we are told that only those who mourn for Jerusalem, those who pray for the establishment of his antitypical throne of the David and kingdom, are to rejoice with her. They and only they, with the prophet, will profit from the abundance of her glory. None others will share her peace and her abundant glory. No, none others will be dandled upon her knees. For the sinner shall not be comforted in Jerusalem, and their lukewarmness will become red hot and put them running to the hills and to the rocks of the mountains. Revelation 6:14-17. Isaiah 66:15-17. For behold, the Yeshua will come with the fire. Now, this is the Son of Yahweh, and with his church like a whirlwind, to render his anger with the fury, and his rebuke with the flames of fire. For by the fire and by his sword will the Yahshua feed with all flesh, and the slain of the Yahshua shall be many. They that sanctify themselves and purify themselves in their gardens behind one a tree in the midst, eating swine's flesh and the abomination in the mouth, shall be consumed together, says the Yahshua. After the Yahweh has done all he can, let's go back and let's be consistent with this Yahshua been in charge here. After the Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, has come to this earth, his second advent, has done all he can do to direct the path of his servants, that's the house of David, that he has set up at Kermit, Texas, and he took away the house of Esau, and there is no more remedy. Just then, divine retribution is to be meted out. Those who continue to walk in their own way will then find themselves in the wide path where there is no divine mercy, where the avenger of the justice takes his toll. They are those who sanctify and purify themselves in the garden behind the one tree. And that's what they did at Kermit, Texas, behind Brother W. Johnson. He was this one tree down there for 33.5 years, behind a leader, that is the angel of the seventh candlestick, Brother Johnson. That is, they pretend to be very religious, and they did. They pretended to be very religious in their gathering places, trusting that the minister will lead them through into the kingdom. They indulge in the use of the forbidden meats, and at the same time boastingly pretend to be sanctified and purified. Unto the Yahshua, however, they appear as whitewashed sepulchres full of the rotten flesh, as the cups that are clean on the outside, but filthy on the inside. Isaiah 66:18-19. For I knew their works and their thoughts. It shall come that I will gather all nations and tongues, and they shall come see my glory, and I will set a sign among them, and I will send those that escape of them unto the nation, unto Tarshish, Pul, and Lud, that draw the bow, which is the Tubal, and Avan unto the isles afar off, that have not heard my fame, neither have seen my glory, and they shall declare my glory among the Gentiles. What the Yahweh is about to do is not to be done in secret. Let's do it again. What the Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, is about to do is not to be done in secret. It is not an imaginary thing, not something enshrouded in a mystery to be guessed at, but it is a plain and open act before all the nations. Now, unto their own destruction, men argue that this is a spiritual slaughter. What is a spiritual slaughter? No one knows, although it is plain to see that it is a judgment for the living. The fact that for over a century the denomination has been teaching that the judgment for the dead is to separate the good from the bad, the tares from the wheat, the foolish arguments now prove that they are not only ignorant of it, but even so blind. Revelation 3:17. That even after told and shown what it is, they cannot see it. Although they claim to know that the judgment is to separate the wheat from the tares, the good from the bad, that it is to cleanse the sanctuary by the blotting out of the names of the bad and the sins of the good, they do not admit that this strange act of Yahweh is nothing less than the judgment for the living in the house of Yahweh. 1 Peter 4:17. For the cleansing of the sanctuary, Daniel 8:14. Purification of the Church, Testimonies, Volume 5, Page 50. Or Page 80. The Cleansing of the Temple, Malachi 3:1-3. No longer try to console yourself that this slaughter of the Yahshua is something imaginary, or that it takes place after the close of the probation. Now get ready, says this verse we just read explains that those who escaped the Yahshua's sword with will be sent to the Gentiles, to those who have not heard of his fame or seen his glory. And they shall declare his glory among the Gentiles. They shall bring to the house of Yahweh all who will be saved. 2. Let us read Yahshua's exact words. Isaiah 66:20-21. And they shall bring all your brethren for an offering unto the Yahshua, unto the Yahweh the Father, out of all nations, upon the horses, and in chariots, and in litters, and upon mules, and upon swift beasts, to my holy mountain, Jerusalem, saith the Yahshua. As the children of Israel bring an offering and a clean vessel into the house of Yahshua. And I will also take of them for priests and for Levites, saith the Yahshua. Now, in view of the fact that those who escaped the slaughter of the Yahweh are sent as missionaries, preachers, and ministers unto all the nations and people who as yet know not the Yahweh and His gospel, there is but this. Let's do it again. Now, in view of the fact that those who escaped the slaughter, that's Ezekiel 9, that starts at the Adventist Church, separating the 144,000 first fruits harvest to start the judgment of the living, are sent as missionaries, preachers, and ministers unto all the nations and people who as yet know not the Yahshua and His plan of the salvation through the blood of the everlasting covenant of His blood, Hebrews 10 and Hebrews 12, there is but this conclusion that the slaughter takes place only among the Yahweh's people and the Seventh-day Adventist Church, that it is a judgment for the living and the house of Yahweh, 1 Peter 4:17. The shepherds are slain because they have kept the sheep away from the Yahshua's green pasture. Present truth that the faithful laity takes their places, that then the church, bright as the sun, fair as the moon, and tremble as an army with troubles, an army with banners, goes forth into all the world, conquering and to conquer. Thus is the plan of the salvation of the everlasting covenant of the Yahshua, that is called the gospel of the Yahshua. Work that will be finished and the wicked world brought to an end. Only those who have withstood temptation and the strength of the mighty one will be permitted to act a part in the proclaiming of the third angel's message, when it shall have swollen to the loud cry. June Hill, 1908. We have been inclined to think that where there are no faithful ministers, there can be no true apostolic believers. But this is not the case. For the Yahweh has promised that where the shepherds are not true, He will take charge of the flock Himself. For Yahweh has never made the flock wholly dependent upon the human instrumentality. But the days of the purification of the church are hastening on apace. But Yahweh will have a people pure and true, and a mighty sifting soon to take place. we shall be better able to measure the strength of Israel. The signs reveal that the time is near when the Yahweh will manifest that, when the Yahshua will manifest that his fan is in his hand, and he will thoroughly purge his floor. So the house of David is Yahshua's floor. And that's who we represent. Testimonies, Volume 5, page 80. Isaiah 6:20. Whereas the new heavens and the new earth which I will make shall remain before me, saith the Yahweh. So shall your seed and your name remain. With this verse, inspiration now begins to disperse things which took place in the earth made new. Isaiah 6:23. And it shall come to pass that from one new moon to another, and from one Sabbath to another, shall all flesh come to worship before me, saith Yahshua. For the Sabbath, you see, is eternal as the earth. It is to be kept only now, but even after this sin-cursed earth is made new, and not only now are Yahweh's people to meet together in the house of the Yahweh each Sabbath, but they shall joyfully continue to do so throughout eternity. Isaiah 6:24. And they shall go forth and look upon the carcasses of the men that have transgressed against me, for their worm shall not die, neither shall their fire be quenched, and they shall be a horn unto all flesh. Although the preceding verses of this chapter are not studied much by any, the last two have often been discussed and debated upon by the many. To some they mean that there is to be an eternal torment, but does the scripture at all sustain such a thought? No, it does not, for the definition of the carcasses, his lifeless bodies, and the prophet Malachi says, for behold, the day cometh that shall burn as an oven, and all the proud, yea, and all that do wickedly shall be stubble. And the day that cometh shall burn them up, saith the Yahshua of the host, and it shall leave them neither root nor branch, but unto you that fear my name shall the Son of Righteousness arise with the healing in his wings, and ye shall go forth and grow up as the calves of the stall, and you shall tread down the wicked, for they shall be ashes under the soles of your feet in the day that I shall do this, saith Yahshua of the host, Malachi 4:1-3. For the carcasses at first, and the ashes at last, of the unfaithful servants, then under the feet of the saints, can hardly indicate that the unfaithful are pushed into the hell fire, there to live forever. Moreover, since only the righteous are given eternal life, then the wicked must be given eternal death. Furthermore, second death, Revelation 20:14, cannot mean second life. For the theory of the eternal torment has been superficially derived from the statement, their worm shall not die, for their worm that gorges on their carcasses, though cannot possibly mean the souls of the people. At least it cannot mean such to him who digs deep into the well of the salvation and that can think and reason for himself. Such a one reads between the lines and notes the full value of the each word. If the worm means anything, then it means that the worm thrives on the carcasses, that it is the agency which reduces the constituents of the carcasses to their original element. Indeed, the worm shall not die. It shall certainly accomplish its consuming work, for the carcasses shall he bring down to the dust. For dust thou art, says the scriptures, and unto the dust shalt thou return. Genesis 3:19. It is this disintegrating agency, the consuming worm, that does not die. Moreover, we are told that the soul that sinneth, it shall die. Ezekiel 16:4. It is plainly seen that the preaching of the eternal suffering in hell far rather than eternal death is prompted by the unscrupulous so-called soul winners, endeavoring to drive their abundance of audiences into the church by the fright. But if they knew that only the born again through the love of the truth are given the right to enter into the holy city, if they knew that those who must be frightened and are excluded from it, if they knew that anything which maketh a lie is also not given the right to enter therein, if they wholeheartedly knew all of these, they would perhaps stop preaching eternal life in hell fire and begin to preach eternal love of the truth. Let us now close our study by the reading of Yeshua's final plea. Watch therefore, for you know not what hour your Yeshua, your master, doth come. But know this, that if the good man of the house had known in what hour or what watch the thief would come, he would have watched and would not have suffered his house to be broken up. Therefore, be ye also ready, for in such an hour as you think not the Son of Man cometh. Who then is a faithful and wise servant, whom as the master hath made ruler over his household, to give them meat in due season? Blessed is that servant whom his master, when he cometh, shall find so doing. Verily I say unto you, that he shall make him ruler over all his goods. But, and if that evil servant shall say in his heart, my master delayeth his coming, and shall begin to smite his fellow servants, and to eat and drink with the drunken, the Yeshua of that servant shall come in a day when he looketh not for him, and in an hour that he is not aware of, and shall cut him asunder, and appoint him his portion with the hypocrites. There shall be weeping and gnashing of the teeth. Matthew 24:42-51. There is but one right choice for you to make, and that is to cease keeping company with the mighty Esau and to join the unpretentious, truth-laden Jacob. This brings us close to our 5th hour contact at the 11th hour call. That's number 11. Click on our audio archives, hear this, and move it on closing out with a song.